McDaniel from Wrong About Everything in for the roundtable. A little shorthanded this week. We no Zerwas, no Miller. So you're filling both roles this morning.
I am the roundtable.
You are all the roundtable. And joining us, as he does every Friday, Representative Tom Emmer. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys.
How are you doing? Have you seen the Avengers yet?
Have I seen what?
The new Avengers movie.
Hey, gentlemen, you know, Andrew, you already know, I'm Mr. Pop Culture.
You are.
The only problem for me is it ends in like 1988.
That's pretty funny.
No, Tom saw the movie last night. The only problem was he got a phone call right in the middle of the movie.
Oh, yeah, don't get me started again. You are the hot dish king.
Guy, you know.
Reigning champion.
When Jason Lewis keeps referring to you as hot a dish, you start to get a little nervous. So,
was this a back-to-back win for you with the hot dish competition?
Actually, you know, they've never given me the victory, even though I know personally that I've won this event at least three out of the past 4 years. But they finally made it official, and what made it so sweet is a writer from the online newspaper in Minnesota, MinPost, was the guy who was doing the tie-breaking. It was a blind taste test at the end between the Emmer Hot Dish, the Breakfast of Champions, which was highly controversial, because you know that the general public, many people don't believe hot dish should ever be served except for dinner. And in this case, we broke all the rules. We did it as a breakfast hot dish, and he had to do that against Rick Nolan's lame excuse for, well, I
said. Wow! I love these hot dish battles.
Oh. I'm telling you, we walked away, Sam, with a big victory, and the guy who broke the tie, I guarantee you, if he would have known who he was choosing between, he wouldn't have gone our way, but it was a blind taste test. This time we won it outright. They couldn't, you know.
So what you're saying is,
sorry about the sour grapes.
Is past hot dish competitions where you know you've won are much like the DNC primary system, completely rigged.
In other words, the super delegate that was there the other day wasn't allowed to know whether it was Hillary or Bernie. He just had to go with his best guess.
Now, I guess the other question that needs to be asked is, are we aware of any Russians that may have been in the room also taking a part in...
Oh, I'm telling you, you know, Amy Klobuchar has called for a special counsel to invest whether or not Russian bots meddled in the outcome. Yes.
Now, a lot of times, you know, when you advance in politics, you often have higher aspirations. Does the hot dish crown is the next step Speaker of the House? Is that the prize?
I'm sorry. I've lost you. Hello? Hello? I've lost you. Are you guys still there?
How long until Hot Dish King lands on a sign for a presidential run?
Well, here's the sad part. Yeah. I mean, we've got major issues going on in Syria. We've got the issues going on in Korea. We've got the Chinese and this potential trade. I mean, we have so many issues.
I think that answers
going
our question.
In the world today, and yet everybody's so excited about hot dish.
True story.
It's Minnesota. What do you expect?
Hey, getting to some of the big issues, we were just working through Sam's top five here a moment ago, and we were talking about this historic meeting with Kim Jong-un with North and South Korea. And going back through the past year and looking at all the variables in play here, one of which, though, has been this administration and a much different tone and a show of strength that could be risky, but in this case, so far, has yielded some historic positive results.
Well, John, I mean, you make a great point. The national news media obviously will give this president and his administration absolutely no credit. There are many of us, myself included, that when he took the approach that he did originally with North Korea, you stand back and you go, oh my goodness, this might not end well. And what I'm talking about is, think historically. Before Kim Jong-un, there was his father. And when his father was acting badly, the Clinton administration, President Clinton, sent a group of diplomats with suitcases of cash over to North Korea and said, all right, here, we're going to pay you off. We're going to reach some kind of an agreement. And he quieted down. Then under George W. Bush, same thing. He started acting up. They send a group of diplomats, suitcases of cash, and they buy him off again. Now, son tries to emulate father, and he's got these nuclear tests going off, everything else, and he wants Donald Trump to send diplomats and suitcases of cash. Instead, Donald Trump does what a lot of us kind of recoiled at. He said, son, if you continue this type of behavior, we will destroy you. And you got a choice. You can either survive or you can go away, and we will make sure of that. And instead, now, all of a sudden, he's quieting down. He wants to talk. It's amazing, not just historic. This is amazing. And we don't know what the outcome will be yet, but the fact that the Trump approach, which is more of a, you know, pop him in the nose approach, which these diplomats, career diplomats, and those of us who have been studying it and watching it for years, are taken aback by, it's actually yielding results. Again, we don't know what the final outcome will be, but certainly they're moving in a direction that a lot of us didn't expect, and we're very happy about.
Do you think that in doing so, that it was a bit of a gamble at all, or do you think there was enough precedent when the president started to take this approach with North Korea and the people around him to know that it would yield the results that people wanted to see and not send us into some type of conflict? Because I imagine that's going to be an argument with us. Well, it may be yielding results, but boy, what a gamble it was getting us so close to going to war with North Korea. Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's got to be. But so two things. One, I've always said since we have been doing these interviews while Donald J. Trump has been the president, you might recall that I always say I'm happy with the people that he's got around him. People like James Mattis are character, and they understand what's going on in the world, and they understand how to deal with it. So that gives me a sense of comfort, and it has from day one. On the other side of it, we've got a president who, I mean, this is the way he is. This is not, he doesn't follow the old playbook. He doesn't behave the way people would expect him to behave. He's not a professional politician. He's a developer. And this is what developers do. Forgive me, all the developers that listen to your show, but they usually come in, and they may not be as brash or as boorish, but they come in and they say, look, you got a zoning law that says I can have one house for every 10 acres, and I got 300 acres here, so I'd have 300 houses. I want 700 houses. I want mixed-use development. I want everything else. And the city's planning commission gets all upset, gets enraged. And you know what? About 6 months later, after all the emotion settles down, they get 10 extra lots, and that's all they ever really wanted. That's the way he seems to negotiate, and it seems to work.
I think it speaks to a lot of the somewhat irrational response to the way Trump has handled his administration so far. There is sort of, and Comey was talking about this yesterday during the interview, and it was very telling. There is an accepted way of behaving and doing business in D.C. There is an accepted norms of how you go about things in the world of politics and on Capitol Hill. And Trump doesn't do any of those things. You know, he doesn't behave in the way, and he doesn't negotiate in the way, and he doesn't speak in the way that everybody is sort of expected to, and people don't necessarily know how to react to that. There was a moment during Comey's interview on Fox News yesterday when he was talking about how he thought Hillary would have been better for the country, and his reasoning had nothing to do with policy, had nothing to do with ideology. It was all about how she behaves versus how Trump behaves. And that, to me, was very telling.
James Comey is one of the greatest disappointments of my experience here in Congress. This guy, he's also the greatest thing that ever happened to the Republican Party. It's like, you know what? You want to help the generic ballot, which is now closed to, Quinnipiac, I think is how you say it. They had a poll first couple weeks of April that has the generic ballot, which is basically a question. If the election were today, would you vote for a Republican or a Democrat? Experts usually say if the generic ballot's within 5 points, the Republicans are winning. At the end of December, we were down 14 points on the generic ballot. As of a couple weeks ago, we are within 3. And I attribute that to James Comey. Just keep talking, Mr. Comey. Keep telling everybody that you're not partisan. Keep telling everybody that you're an academic, intellectual. You are the political elite here in Washington. That's what people in the public want to get rid of. And that is why, believe it or not, whether you like him or not, Donald Trump is actually getting stronger with the average man or woman here in America, because Andrew, they're sick and tired of being told this is how you're supposed to behave.
Yeah.
They want to see change. And this guy has come in here not acting like a politician. And this happens at the state level, just like the federal level. People show up. They have a righteous indignation for the way they have been treated for years, being patted on the head. So they come to the state legislature. And you know what? The second they start speaking out, entrenched bureaucracies, bureaucrats, lobbyists, they identify them, and if they do not cooperate, they try to marginalize them and push them out to the edge so they are not effective. This guy doesn't care. He is the honey badger of politics. It's like he doesn't care about the media. He doesn't care about the special interests. He will go against whatever it is because he loves this country. And at the end of the day, whether you agree with him or disagree with him, I think the most important thing that people are taking away is he's doing what he's doing because he loves the United States of America, and that gives him some credibility, believe it or not.
Have you noticed that sort of frustration or confusion amongst your colleagues in the House when it comes to working with the president? Has that happened there with respect to negotiating with the Oval Office?
Oh, I think the Oval Office is incredibly frustrated with some of the more senior members on the Senate side and the House side. I mean, I think you see a lot of retirements because a lot of my colleagues for years have been allowed to do whatever they want. You know, they tell others that you can't behave that way. And then they have, you know, the bureaucrats that help them. And in this case, you got Donald Trump going, you guys have all led this country to the edge of extinction. And it's time for you to go, and I'm not going to play ball with you. And it literally what he's doing is he's giving life to a whole bunch of other members that haven't had a say, that actually still are connected to their home districts. And I think the answer to your question is yes, Andrew. There are people that really struggle with this president because it is not business as usual. And again, you know, history will be the judge as to whether it was right or wrong. Today, we're just living the experience, and it's something that nobody is used to, but it is having success in some fashion, which is pointed out by things like Kim Jong-un meeting with the South Korean leader, which, you know, a year ago, did anybody see that happening?
Couple of things we want to get to before we cut you loose here this morning, Representative Tom Emmer. Carver County Veterans Memorial Trip to Washington, D.C. Talk a little bit about that.
Oh, it was great. Unfortunately, I get very disappointed. I met them over in the Rayburn House office building. Obviously, veterans should be at the top of our list always. But they probably should have done their lunch get-together off-site, because even these guys who have served our country, defended our freedoms, they have to go through security at this place. And I mean, they would only expedite veterans in wheelchairs. I'm not trying to be overly critical of the Capitol Hill police, because they're trying to make sure everybody's safe, but come on. I mean, these guys are some of this country's finest.
You'd like a pre-check.
It was tough, Andrew, because I went down and talked to the guys that are running the security and said, look, we got a whole bunch of veterans. Is there a way we can expedite them? The guy goes, nope, they all got to go through the, okay, great, that's fine, because they all look so dangerous, you know. No, they're great. These guys, it was wonderful to see them. Haven't been able to follow up with anybody who was on the trip to find out what kind of an experience they had, but it was great to see them, and I'm glad that they made the trip.
I want to give you an opportunity here to plug as well. You've got a Young Women in Leadership program that's now accepting applications.
Oh, people should get involved in these. What we do is we bring, over the next few months, because it's usually over the summer, high school women. We try to, and this is a nonpartisan thing, so I don't care, Republican, Democrat, other, that does not matter. What we try to do is bring incredible success stories, female success stories. We've had the first female brigadier general. We've had, female personalities from radio and TV. We've had corporate success. We've had surgeons, female surgeons. And they come in, they meet with young women, and they not only tell them their story, but then they answer their questions. What's it like being in a, the profession you're in, and, you know, are you married? Have you had kids? How did you make that work, you know, and how did you deal with certain things in the workplace? It's fantastic. It really is. And I hope people will go to our website and look up Tom Emmer, the congressional website, and just look for the Women in Leadership program, and please apply. And if I get parents listening, again, this is not a partisan thing at all. This is about exposing young women to female leaders in our community, and giving them some role models, which, by the way, everybody who has presented to these young women has given them their contact information and offered to stay in touch so that they can kind of mentor them as they get out of high school and move into college and beyond.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. You can find more information. Is there stuff on your website about that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's all there. Just go look up the Women in Leadership program on congressional website, the official website.
Tom Emmer, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us for another Friday visit. Look forward to chatting with you again.
Hot dish champion.
Hot dish king.
Hey, speaking of that, is there snow coming this weekend, guys?
No, I'm afraid
no,
not.
No, no.
Sorry. Right. Take care.
Does he want to come back on again? I don't know. He's snow. It's almost all gone. A little bit left. It's almost all gone.
It's almost all gone. Real quick, Darren in St. Paul. Good morning, Darren. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for the build-up for my call.
are you a hot dish king?
Yeah. No, I was talking about the Kim Jong-il thing when you're talking
yes,
about
sir.
Tom Emmer. But
yeah.
Basically, leaders like Ronald Reagan, Winston Churchill, and President Trump show the way how you properly or effectively deal with people like Kim Jong-il or Kim Jong-sun, or whatever his name is, and people like Woodrow Wilson, Neville Chamberlain, Barack Obama, and Bill Clinton show you how you not to deal with these people. So it's more effective when we have people that are willing to show force through, or strength through force instead of giving them whatever they want.
Yeah, the history has kind of borne that out. Thanks for your call, Darren. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely of the opinion that I feel more comfortable when a gamble is made with all of the information that is available. Not always 100% confident that that's what Donald Trump is doing. However, throughout this North Korea process, I think you could that it's silly to think that you could deal with Kim Jong-un in a traditional manner,
right,
using traditional diplomatic methods. So I always had a little bit more faith that, punching the bully in the nose might be the right way to deal with this. So I think it's extraordinarily important to give President Trump credit where credit is due, because I do feel that this was not his staff saying, here's how you handle this.
Right.
This was Donald Trump saying, here's how I'm going to handle this.
Yeah, I agree.
There's a quick write-up in Axios from Mike Allen that will give you some points on about this coming up in just a moment, but it lends itself to exactly what you were saying, Brian McDaniel. We'll get to that on the way. We're still in the middle of Sam's top five.
Yeah,
this may be a record this morning.
I think it is.
Still got the number five entry in Sam's top five to wrap up. We will get to that next, plus a whole lot more. Friday Roundtable in the house.
Your shot at $1,000 now. Text the keyword WIN to 200-200. You'll get a text confirming entry, plus iHeartRadio info. Standard data and message rates apply. That's WIN to 200-200.
I'm Chris Addison. Here's a look at the roads being brought to you by the TJ Martell Foundation. Looks like we have an accident here.
Shoes of both the tiny little shoes of Nick Zerwas and the hilarious shoes of Brian Miller. You got a tall task ahead of you.
James Comey-sized task, but just remember that, the triangle is the strongest shape.
Fair point.
Funny, because we're actually going to talk a bit about squares and triangles next hour.
Oh, yeah, a little algebra.
Yeah, more pizza related.
I was told there would be no math.
a little geometry on Justice and Drew today.
Before we
wrong math. Yeah, wrong math pun.
It's okay. You were not going to hear any pushback from me. So, yeah, totally. Yeah, all that, right? All right. Before we wrap up Sam's top five, we were talking about the North Korea situation. Mike Allen out of Axios. Quick write up here. Why this historic day in Korea matters, war less likely. CFR President Richard Haass, who just months ago said there was a 50-50 chance of U.S. war with North Korea, said the historic summit today between North Korea and South Korean leaders means that chance has clearly come way down. And what I like about this particular piece is it speaks to what we were talking about earlier, and that is, we don't know what in total will come out of this right now. We just know the current path that we're on. And when you just look at it on its face, the reality was it was kind of 50-50. that there would be some conflict. And now that, in and of itself, at a bare minimum, has come way down. Only months ago, West Wing aides told Axios that war with North Korea was even more likely than it looked publicly. It's hard to overstate how much worry and pessimism there was about this behind the scenes, even as other Trump controversies dominated public attention. Trump, who can be expected to claim credit for the denuclearization announcement, tweeted, "Korean War to end. The United States and all of its great people should be very proud of what is now taking place in Korea." Analysts quickly gave Trump credit for helping to set the stage for the choreography of peace with his agreement to an upcoming meeting with Kim Jong-un. Eurasia Group's Ian Bremmer tweeted, "Trump snapped the ball and the Koreans are running with it." I thought that was an interesting take.
Sounds like it's a wildcat formation.
Bremmer also tweeted that Trump plus the leaders of China, North Korea, and South Korea together get my vote for the Nobel Peace Prize.
Hmm? Oh, you can't just give it to Trump.
No, of course not. Bremmer went on to say, this is the first major positive geopolitical development all year, adding it's hard to see the U.S. credibly threatening military preemption when peace is breaking out across the peninsula, which is precisely the point. And New York Times Peter Baker on MSNBC's Morning Joe said it's an exhilarating moment of hope in this final chapter, in effect, of the Cold War. And Baker said Trump will make the case that it was his pressure, the maximum pressure campaign, as he liked to call it, that brought North Korea to the table.
I would like to find one person, you know, I'm as critical as anybody on Trump, but I'd like to find one person who would say that the Korean War would have ended now without Donald Trump as president.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to make that argument.
Yeah.
Hard to make that argument.
You need all those factors that we mentioned. You need all those variables involved. This is not a singular action that brought us to where we currently are. But
you know, the clear takeaway from me is that Kim Jong-un, before Trump, found that path to be sustainable. That path of threatening, you know, missile testing, trying to sort of shake down the international community to continue to be able to do business, to continue to be able to just keep enough of his people, sustain his people. And he clearly thought, you know, with the change in approach from the Trump administration, the pressure put on China, clearly found that the path was no longer sustainable and changes had to be made.
Well, I mean, when President Obama, you know, had the Iran, nuclear deal, you know, a lot of conservatives said, you know, that we're being duped. You know, we're being tricked. This is not going to work out. And I think we actually probably are right. You know, this is something that in Iran is not going to work out. But for the people who are looking at this situation saying, okay, well, you know, Kim Jong-un's going to be loosey with the football and pull it away at the last minute. Mm-hmm. I think that would be very plausible based on what we know of North Korea. But when I see South Korea not only embracing the peace, but actually embracing Kim Jong-un physically, they are the last people that are going to believe him without a fair amount of confidence that this is real. So that makes me think this is real.
This, you know, it's funny too, because suddenly now I'm reminded of all the conversations we were having last year about how there was no good resolution to this. Like, when you looked at preemptive military action, what that would have meant for the region, even if it didn't bring the United States into some larger full-scale, you know, war, the fact of the matter was that there was no real good viable way to go into North Korea with military action, remove Kim Jong-un, try to bring in Western ideals and peace without the cost of hundreds of thousands of lives in that peninsula. And so when you kind of look at it in that way, and the fact that we did show some strength and has brought us to this place where they can talk, you're right. The fact that South Korea is out in the open, that's a part of that is still just quite astounding to me. I mean, I think if you, a year ago, 2 years ago, the opportunity of Kim Jong-un to be out in the open anywhere would have been taken advantage of. And here, they're having a powwow. You know, it's incredibly historic.
Let's put a bow on Sam's top five that we started an hour ago.
So now I feel like it's really built up at this point.
This fifth one better.
Well, this is the most important thing of the morning.
Really important.
Number five.
Avengers Infinity War is on pace to be the highest grossing film of all time.
They got my money.
Already. And yeah, I'm sure both these guys have already seen it. And John's probably going to go eight times this weekend.
They'll probably end up getting a little more of my money, too. Yeah. I think I'll definitely go see it.
They're going to get all the money.
From Fox News, a film event that's been 10 years and 18 films in the making, Avengers Infinity War. It's finally hitting theaters this weekend. If you're not interested in the Marvel superhero hype, now is a good time to get on board, as it's a serious contender to be the most popular movie of all time.
It's too late to get on board. You got 18 movies to catch up with. And if you're going to get on board now and see
this, you
better
start watching them now so you can watch
them
on Sunday.
Will not make any damn sense.
If you are not pretty
much fully up to speed on the Marvel Cinematic Universe, there's probably a couple movies here or there that you could skip.
Yeah,
if you were going to play catch up, you know, I don't think you need to see all of them, but you got to be really invested in the characters, in the story arcs of the characters, in the history of the characters in the movies to really get this movie.
Yeah, I saw a list, and we won't do it now. I saw a list of the movies prior to seeing the film that someone suggested you watch before seeing it, and it's spot on. I heard somebody make a comment, though, that I thought was really, really interesting, and it's worthy of a longer discussion at some point. But the 18 films in the making, they pointed to what we really saw was the cinematic equivalent of your Game of Thrones-esque show, where this was a long series, but it played out on the big screen with major motion pictures and huge budgets. But that's what this has now.
Yeah.
This has now become.
We've never seen anything like this before.
No, it's incredible. It's incredible cinema, to see.
You know, to have this universe be created over this many films, and to not have it like lag off in quality. That's what's really been most impressive, is that they keep getting, they either keep getting better or they keep staying just as good. Really, really difficult thing to pull off, and major kudos to Marvel Studios for being able to do it.
You asked a question off the air, and I'll answer it this way. If you have any emotional investment in any of the characters of these movies, you will not be disappointed with this film in any way, shape, or form.
Your jaw is going to be on the floor.
Yeah.
651-989-5855. Jason Lewis, Representative Jason Lewis. We do expect him to join the show at some point this morning.
He will be joining us in the next segment.
Oh, in the next segment.
Yes.
All right. I was about to say we don't have a firm time on that.
I have a firm time. Now we do.
Yeah. All right. Very good.
U.S. House approves measure taking aim at Met Council. Representative Jason Lewis.
You're not going to want to miss this.
Yeah. You know what? We'll just leave it at that. U.S. House approves measure taking aim at Met Council. Jason Lewis will have the details coming up.
Justice and Drew.
You basically have been impacted by at least two Home Alone booby traps.
Yeah.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM.
I'm Chris Addison. Here's a look at the roads being brought to you by Compassion International. Not your typical Friday out there. Pretty busy. Looks like we have an accident northbound 35.
Parody song contest next hour with a fantastic prize this morning that, if I'm not mistaken, includes a Jimmy Buffett. Am I right?
A Jimmy Buffet.
And an eagle?
Yeah.
Or two?
Yeah, we have tickets. Jimmy Buffett and the Eagles are coming to the Twin Cities. We have tickets to give away to the winner of the Parody Song Contest, which is happening 1 hour from now.
Excellent. We have Brian McDaniel in for the roundtable this morning. Very pleased to... Also, welcome to the show.
Representative Jason Lewis, good morning, sir.
Hey, gang. How are you?
We're doing fantastic, especially considering the news about the amendment that you got unanimously added onto a FAA reauthorization act yesterday. We've been kind of teasing it a little bit. We haven't given any details yet. We'll allow you the opportunity to share with our listeners what this amendment does.
Well, you know what? I'd be happy to, because I'm pretty happy about this as well. It passed unanimously in the House as part of the FAA reauthorization, our amendment. It seems that apparently no one else in the country has a problem with regional governments being elected, except some special interests in the Twin Cities.
Yeah.
What we did, we are the only metropolitan planning organization, the Met Council, that does not have elected members. Now, that doesn't mean they have to be elected directly. They could be a county commissioner, a city councilman or woman, but they would be elected so there's accountability. We're the only one, and we happen to be the largest MPO in the country that can raise taxes independently, and yet all the other ones are in compliance from a 2012 rule that the DOT and the FTA sent down saying you got to have elected members. So all I did was make certain that Minnesota wasn't going to be grandfathered forever and there'd be some accountability at a metropolitan council that is controlling transit, transportation, housing, sewer and water, you name it. We've seen this concentration of power, and I've talked about it on the radio for 20 years in the metropolitan council. No one is denying them funding. There's no federal funding, despite what the demagoguery out there is. There's no federal funding at risk. All it says is you got to get in compliance in a transition period, just like every other MPO did years ago. And you would have thought all hell had broken loose because the governor wrote a letter. The Met Council's out there lobbying. They're terrified of accountability. Look, this is one of the things I came to Washington to do. I talked about this for a couple of decades. I'm not an average politician. I'm not here for my health. I came here to do this, and I'm doing it, and I'm glad I did it.
The Star Tribune has headlined their article of reporting on this, which is already getting kind of buried. I mean, this is pretty big news, and it's being pushed down. But the headline did it, U.S. House OKs measure taking aim at Met Council. So
well,
you can kind of see
that.
We're
taking some aim, I guess, at their unaccountability. But what I really take issue with is the notion that it's stripping any federal funds from the metropolitan area. Totally untrue.
Yeah.
All the council has to do is come into compliance. Other MPOs have done this through a transition period, and they did not lose federal funding. I was debating this on the floor yesterday, and there was a fellow who was putting up token opposition, and that's why it passed unanimously. They knew it was going to pass. But he was making the argument, well, you're just going after your local regional government, the Met Council. And I said, sir, your MPO from the city you're in is already in compliance. Has it been chaos? Is it a complete mess? That's all I'm suggesting for the Met Council.
Congressman Lewis, this is Brian McDaniel. I was a Palenty appointee to the Met Council. Hold your applause. I know. But I think what you're saying is an extraordinarily important point for people to understand. No matter what you think about some of the more controversial or less controversial things that the Met Council does, it has always been unfathomable to me that an unelected board had the power to raise taxes. And that is something that 100%, you know, for all the bluster one way or the other about the Met Council, people need to understand that the Met Council does have that power or did have that power. And that is something that desperately needed to be addressed.
If people want to see the power the Met Council has, ask why your city has to submit a comprehensive plan every so often. Go look at Thrive MSP 2040. It's housing, it's transit, it's sewer and water. And you're right, Brian, you know more than most on this. They have the power to raise taxes. The reason they're unelected is, and the reason they were grandfathered in, they started out as an advisory board without these sorts of powers. They've concentrated powers over the years, but they're still unelected. And so all we're saying is come in compliance with what the Fed said in 2012 and what every other MPO has done. Doesn't jeopardize any funding, and that's the real, that you know they're scared when they start throwing those lines out. And I don't know what they're afraid of, Brian. You were there. What is the problem? Every other city seems to be able to handle this.
Well, Governor Mark Dayton, though, seems to think that, you know, this was a long-standing and productive process. They've been doing it for a long time, Representative Jason Lewis.
So why should they ever
have to change?
Well, and to Brian's point, that is the point. So you've got this unelected aspect to it that changes every time there's a change in the governor's mansion. There is no continuity. So they talk about uncertainty. Well, Lewis's amendment will give us uncertainty. No, uncertainty is when the council appointees change every time there's a gubernatorial election. A more cohesive, steady route would be people who are accountable on the board. But you can tell, you know, sometimes you can tell by your opponents their reaction as to whether you've hit a nerve or not. And I think it's safe to say we've hit a nerve.
Yeah, for Governor Dayton to have this letter ready to go on what, on its surface, when you look at how other states do this and it works fine, seems like a pretty benign amendment, and it did pass unanimously. To have this letter ready to go and fired off shows you, you know, you ask the question, what are they afraid of? They're afraid of losing power.
Well, what I can't figure out, gentlemen, is why this hasn't happened before.
Right.
I mean, this is really kind of amazing that it took this somebody to come in and say, well, look, this is a little odd here, fellas. Let's try to get something, some reform done, some accountability done, so that we can have a council that answers or that represents the people it purports to represent. I mean, that's really the key.
What's
Scott County, by the way, Scott County Board of Commissioners issued a nice statement saying thank you for this, that they've been looking for this for a number of years, has had a number of other county commissions. So, look, this is something that needs to happen. The status quo is, you know, the empire striking back. They're going to try to play inside baseball and get rid of this thing. Mm-hmm. We've got to make certain that we keep the heat on and get some accountability back in the metro area.
And again, this was attached to the FAA reauthorization bill, moves over to the Senate. What's your confidence level once it reaches there?
Well, quite frankly, if it stays inside baseball and the special interests that came out and were lobbying legislators yesterday and the governor's letter and all of that, that wasn't done just for somebody's health. That was done to sway people. If they have the power on the other chamber, I don't know. If the citizens rise up and tell the United States Senate and our senators, hey, this is something we've talked about for 25 years. This is something right or left, conservative or liberal, people have been concerned about for a number of years. Don't touch this amendment, then I think it survives. So it's up to the people.
Congressman Lewis, I think it'll be really interesting to see how Senator Tina Smith handles this, because not only, you know, was she, you know, Lieutenant Governor and Chief of Staff for Mark Dayton, but she was the Chief of Staff for the City of Minneapolis. So right. Her attachment and interaction with the Met Council has been, you know, vast and longstanding. So it'll be interesting to see whether this is something that she would allow to stay inside baseball.
No, I absolutely agree with that. The mayor of Minneapolis is already upset. Look, there's some people that have done very well with the current structure. There's no question about that. But there's a whole lot of folks, and a lot of them I represent, that haven't. And that's what we're trying to fix here, Kate.
Talk a little bit about how this would look should it get passed, should it get signed into law. What will the process be of determining who is on the Met Council? Would they be voted in themselves, or would they be appointed, and as long as they are elected officials, then they will be in compliance?
Yeah, the rule from the feds is fairly generous. It just says you need some accountability and you need to have some elected officials. So you could have a system that's been floated in Minnesota where you may have a board whose X number are made up of local elected officials. As I say, you wouldn't have to be, you're going to elect the board. You could have a Scott County Commissioner, Dakota County Commissioner, a city councilman from Anoka. You could have anybody represented. But the beauty of that is that if someone doesn't like what the Met Council is doing, they may vote the commissioner out. They may take it out on their current seat. That's accountability. And when you are insulated, they can pretty much force on the metro area whatever they think is right.
Well, we will certainly keep an eye on this. We'll certainly keep an eye on the Senate. Is this being that this is attached to an FAA reauthorization bill? Is this the type of bill that typically kind of floats through without a lot of opposition, or is your expectation that it's going to get some severe pushback?
We will pass the FAA bill today with the amendment included, send it over to the other chamber, and the FAA reauthorization expires in September, so something will have to be done this summer to pass a companion bill in the other chamber and get it to the president. Otherwise, come September, they'll have to do an extension, and we don't want that. So it passes the House today with the amendment, goes over to the Senate, and we'll see where it goes from there. That's why I want to get everybody ready and get their antenna up that this is something that we've talked about for many, many years in the metro area, and here's our chance to actually make some progress.
Yeah, it's great news, and kudos to a job well done, Representative Lewis.
Thank you.
Yeah, man.
Brian, Andrew, John, and Samantha, the real kingpin of the show.
True story.
And, I do want to, before I let you go, I do want to offer you a bit of condolences on your what was surely a gut-wrenching loss in the hot dish competition.
Obviously, it was rigged. I knew there was trouble when the person who announced the opening envelope was Warren Beatty. At that point, I said, this thing is a real problem.
One thing, just before...
We'll have to shoot for next year.
Before the Congress leaves, I also want to recognize that many senators and representatives in Minnesota are trying to do these similar things locally. So shout out to Representative Tony Albright, who has a lot of these items in his Met Council reform bill.
In fact, I need to get together with those folks sooner rather than later and join forces so we can keep this going. Absolutely. They've done a great job.
Take care, Representative Lewis. We'll talk
Thank
to you
sir.
Again soon.
Thank you.
Take care.
The from the Star Tribune story, the Met Council chair criticized the proposal, saying this. She said, we cannot predict whether the region and its many... let me back up here real quick. A lot of words here. Just want to throw that out there. There's just a lot of words put together. We cannot predict whether the region and its many diverse interests would be able to continue to find common ground on building new planning organization. This uncertainty could paralyze our regional transportation planning and funding efforts, putting billions of dollars in federal funding at risk.
No, it can't. All you got to do is be in compliance.
Yeah, just...
That's all you got to do.
Just follow the change. It doesn't... Yeah, words.
I mean, and Mark Dayton's just lying in this letter. He's just flat out lying. And in the last paragraph, I reiterate my request that you oppose the Lewis Amendment. Eliminating the Met Council's MPO status would trigger a lengthy redesignation process, blah, 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 blah. No, nobody's talking about doing that.
U.S. Representative Rick Larson said to Lewis's statement, it is attempting to break apart the operating structure of local planning organization, seemingly to punish it. You know what? Sure. I'm okay with that.
Well, and adding, you know, some, you know, form of, you know, elected official to the board is one of the more, one of the more proposals that is gaining steam. One of the things that probably you can kind of...
Because it makes sense.
You can get to, yes and no. We can have a larger discussion on that about whether you need...
The swamp is bubbling.
No, because what I would say is that do you need to have, you know, members of the Met Council at all? Is it something that if you're going to have elected officials on there, it's a different type of thing, because there's not always going to be a focus on the region. There's going to be a focus on what your part of the region is. However, so that's an argument that you could have. But you could also say that what the Met Council does is something that many other departments already do. So there's, you know, different parts of the conversation you can have.
Coming up on Twin Cities News Talk and Justice and Drew, gun control bills are dead at MN Capital again. According to the Pioneer Press, apparently Erin May Quaid just didn't sit long enough.
Nah, she probably needs to.
Should have sat longer.
Yeah, sit back down.
We'll get into that. Also, we haven't had a chance to cover this yet. DFL versus RFL. A demand for the GOP farm groups to change a confusingly similar name and logo, plus the world-famous parody song contest.
Coming up in just about 30 minutes.
Justice and Drew.
I got enough stuff. I'm going to carry it out. I didn't bring a bag, but I don't need a bag, and I want my nickel.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM.
I'm Chris Addison. Here's a look at the roads being brought to you by Compassion International. Not your typical Friday out there. Pretty busy. Looks like we have an accident northbound 35. W still working at Lake Street. This one is taking out the